Good evening and welcome to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. It must be Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. because we're here in beautiful Willoughby, Ohio, and we're going to be talking about small business like we usually do. And we define small business as 1 to 25 employees, regardless of sales, regardless of what industry they're in. Whatever they're doing, if they're small, and occasionally we wander off the reservation to bigger companies, but that's our sweet spot. We, when I say we, I'm talking about my co-host and longtime business partner, Adam Sunhalter. We've been together over 16 years with a company called Maximum Value Partners, and it's a business coaching company. And we love the small business owner. We love to talk about them. We try to share a lot of stories about our coaching exploits on our Wednesday night show like this. Since we're meeting with clients all week, every week, different things come up, and that creates some good fodder for our programs when we come in here on Wednesday evening. And it also really, the shows result in being a podcast, and these podcasts are available to you all over. Adam, my partner, will give you some ways to reach us, and we'd love to have you be a part of our show tonight. Now, occasionally we interview people also, and we're fortunate to do that tonight with Joni Fetters with a company called Aileron. And Aileron deals with business management. They're business management consultants, and they deal with small businesses much like us. And they create a variety of programs to help these owners become more successful. And Adam, what do you think? Well, we want to talk about Joni a little bit.
Yeah, who doesn't want to be more successful? That's right. We'll bring Joni on here in a second. So, yeah, we always look for interesting guests that can be very interesting and helpful for our audience. And as you know, Jack, there aren't enough folks trying to help the small business markets. And so when we find ones who are good and ones who get it, those are the ones we like to be able to kind of share with and kind of come on here. And so, as Jack said, you know, each of these shows goes into a podcast. You can get those at dirtysecretsofsmallbusiness.com. Or you can subscribe in things like iTunes and have it delivered right to your smartphone. So there's lots of ways to get the show. If you miss any part of the live show when it's on the air and get some of the older shows we've had. We have over 150 podcasts already out there and done. So at this point, why don't we bring Joni on? So we're going to bring Joni on. Joni's calling in from the Dayton area. You there, Joni?
Yes, I am.
Hello. Good to hear your voice. Glad you can join us this evening.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Hello, Joni. Good to have you.
Thank you.
So we had a chance to talk with Joni a few times, and as often the case, when you start to share stories, it's amazing how you can quickly start to connect some dots. And so we learned, even though Joni's down in the most southwestern part of the state of Ohio, kind of in the Dayton area, she actually grew up here in Northeast Ohio. And so part of what we wanted to do is we wanted to give Joni a chance, first of all, to just kind of give some background, introduce herself, because in addition to being president of Aileron right now, she also is I don't know if I want to call you a recovering business owner or not, but you've owned a couple of companies over time. That's part of what we'll talk about tonight. But if you wouldn't mind just kind of starting out tonight, Joni, and just kind of give people a little bit of background, you know, kind of, you know, where you grew up and your education, all that kind of stuff. You want just kind of talk about yourself here for a few minutes and kind of give our audience a little background and kind of what Joni's all about.
Great. Thank you. Absolutely. My heart is still in Cleveland, even though I do live further south. I will say it's nice to have the springs get here a little bit earlier than it was up in the north, but we still vacation there on Lake Erie every year. I went to high school, Leary High School, ended up going to Miami University and studying all sorts of things. My dad says I switched careers 7 times. And I did. I started as a teacher and then ended up in business. And I'd love to say that I was a model student, but I wasn't. I graduated with a GPA that was miserable enough to have to, like, do my own search through a newspaper to get a job. And I started off as a customer service rep selling plastic bags. Then just started learning parts of the business, and I went on to work at a company called Andrew Jergens, which was a soap and lotion company, and I was there for 5 years. And I went from HR to cost accounting to brand management to kind of logistics. And I only give that much detail because I think what was really fun that I realize about myself now is just I really became fascinated with how the different functions of business work together. And joining a bigger company, you don't have the appreciation that it takes to put all that together as a smaller company. So it's been fun to see both sides of that fence.
Well, yeah, it's a very broad exposure in just 5 years. So everything from people with the HR piece to the numbers. You said cost accounting. That's one of Jack's favorite topics.
Oh, Jonah. Yeah. very few people, even people with degrees in accounting, don't take cost accounting, or at least don't practice cost accounting.
And then on to brand management, so getting more on the marketing front. So you're touching on all the key components of business. Okay, so you had about 5 years there. Okay, and then what? Then what happened?
So it was interesting while I was at Jergens. They were owned by American Brands first, and the mantra with American Brands was, how do we increase market share? And what kind of products or where do we need to go sell to get there? The Japanese acquired American Brands, or Jergens, I guess halfway through my career there, and it's now called the Kao Corporation. They came out of Japan. And what was interesting there was they started talking about how do we build the best products, and market share is an outcome of building best products rather than the other way around. It was really kind of an interesting time to be there and just see the culture shift. So I give that backdrop because it started to really become clear to me that companies can really like focus on how they add value. And I had the opportunity then to switch to what I consider the ultimate company to work for, which was the Iams Company, which was a manufacturer of dog and cat food. And their whole focus was on culture, customer, products, and people, and how do we create the best products for the consumer, which was our dog and cat. So we did not consider the pet owner the customer, we considered the dog and cat the customer. And it was the best ride I've ever been on as far as working for a company. We worked extremely hard, but it was really fun to be part of the success. And the company grew from, when I joined, it was around $200 million. And when it was sold to Procter & Gamble, at that time it was the largest acquisition, which was a $2.3 billion acquisition. It had doubled size every 4 years. When Clay worked with Paul Iams and took it over, it was $10 million in sales. So it was really fun to be part of that company, and the culture was awesome, and it had leadership, and it had vision and mission. So I really fell in love with learning and seeing how a company can be really well run, even despite the quick growth that it was going through and all the growing pains it was going through. And so then I had an opportunity to go run a company or actually create a company with a partner. And I did that for 5 years. And I have to say, my biggest disappointment was I didn't know how to do it like the Iams Company. I didn't create a great culture. I don't feel like I really understood how to drive more strategy. So it was just quite an interesting thing to realize, again, that you work within these structures, some of them good and some of them not so good, but recreating it is kind of a challenge. So I ended up using some of the classes from the Iams Company that they started offering to local businesses in leadership and strategy. And so I ended up getting to straddle both the Iams Company as a business owner and using their classes, which was really a fun thing to do.
Wow, okay. So it's funny, when you were talking about the target market, you mentioned that it was the pets and the animals themselves versus the pet owner. And we've had lots of discussions with clients about those kind of very, very discussions. Who's your market? But as you were saying that, I often get off on tangents sometimes because or make random movie references, Joni, just a heads up. But the image that was flashing through my mind is there was the 1990s movie with Bill Murray called Scrooged. Remember, I don't know if you ever saw that or not, but it's kind of like a modern day version of the tale Scrooge. And towards the end of it, there was the bigwig who owned the TV station, and they're mad because he was screwing up the live broadcast. But the cats were really excited about it. The cats are going up by the TV, right? Because they're all excited. So I pictured whatever the IMAX commercials were when you guys were probably testing them. You had, you know, the cats and dogs in the room and see which ones are going towards the TV to be able to kind of, hey, that's a winner, right? Keep that one versus the other ones, right? Or try to think like a dog today or think like a cat today. That's got to be a challenge for the marketing team, doesn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it is. And I always love the saying that says, be the person your dog thinks you are. but it really is. It was really interesting because when we got clearer on that was our customer, it was amazing how the organization through strategy got much more focused. And the reason, I think there's a testament that just happened 2 weeks ago. So it's been 20 years since the IMAX company sold to Procter & Gamble. And we had a 20-year reunion that was organized by some employees or past employees. And we had over 300 people show up to this event Dayton at Aileron.
Well, that's quite a few. That really shows a culture that was created in a very positive way.
Yeah, it was really neat. And we ended up getting to see, I know down the road, like, you guys have such a good partnership together. And it was fun to see Clay Mattil, who was the founder and owner, and his president, hired president, that he ended up hiring when we were about $200 million. And just to remember through or to talk through their partnership and how well that worked together. So, yeah, it was really fun to get back together and hear everybody's stories as well as just kind of reflect on what made all those people come back together after 20 years.
Well, that makes me think of another question, too, because it seemed like, yeah, things were going fantastic there. You really liked what was going on and learning a lot, having a lot of fun. So what drove you to want to leave that to try your own thing? I mean, it almost probably seemed nuts to some of the people that were there. Like, again, why would you leave this great place? But, you know, what made you want to take that leap to kind of try your own thing, Joni?
Which is a great question, because I thought I would be a lifer at IMAX. I just loved it so much. But I think it's about opportunity and being an entrepreneur or entrepreneurial, and IMAX was a very entrepreneurial culture. And then I start to think back to how I jumped to different majors in college and I jumped to different professions within the same company, cost accounting to brand management to HR, whatever. And I think, I don't know if it's boredom or just like the idea of opportunity to learn something new. And so this opportunity kind of presented itself with an individual that I had worked with before. And I guess I must have some risk-taking in me and said, let's do it. And I entered in pretty blindly to the situation, but was willing to make the jump and take the leap, I guess.
Oh, it sounds like a version of your first company, Jack, after a night of heavy drinking with an ex-buddy of yours and waking up the next morning and saying, hey.
It's amazing how companies start. That's a great example you're reminding me. It was a long time ago, an old friend, 10 years I hadn't seen him. And he just got back from out of the country. And I had taken a year off after, working in the big corporate environment for about 7-8 years. And actually more than that. And basically, he and I went out. We had one of those great old friend dinners. Way too much to drink. And we left. And the next morning it was, geez, I woke up thinking something was new, and I called him up and said, did we decide to go into business? And he said, hell yes, we went into business. And we did. And it was great. And we haven't stopped since.
So that's not necessarily a bad thing to do, Joni, in terms of, you know, kind of taking some of that inspiration and maybe kind of throwing caution to the wind a little bit and kind of grabbing hold of an opportunity that kind of seizes you. So we fully understand that. So we got to hit our first break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how did you then, you know, I'll talk a little bit more about what happened with that company, because then it eventually led you to Aileron, which we've kind of hinted at here a little bit, but we want to talk a little bit more about that when we come back here for our second segment. So stay tuned, and we'll be back here shortly. I'm Adam Sonholz.
And I'm Jack Mancini, and we're talking to Joni, and it's going to get pretty good.
All right, we got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, wintradio.com. Welcome back to Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonholter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
All right, we're here. We've got Joni Fetters from Aileron on with us. And in our first segment here, she's giving a little bit of background about her Northeast Ohio roots and a little bit early part of her career in terms of how she had tremendous exposure after, as much of us do, have a lot of choices in college in terms of what you want to major in, and decided on business, but got exposed to all kinds of different business stuff over the years between small companies and some bigger companies, and watched a smaller company grow into a bigger company and be sold, and then she left to go and start her own thing. And we were kind of talking about that as we kind of went to break. So I'd like to understand a little bit what happened with that first entrepreneurial venture of yours. And you said it lasted about 5 years, Joni, and what happened there, and then I think that's what then led you to go to Aileron, but just if you wouldn't mind kind of telling the rest of that part of the story, it would be fantastic.
Absolutely. As you said, it happened over a dinner. I love that. I feel like that kind of happened with my partner and I, and we literally have the airplane tickets of where we just took a chance, jumped on an airplane, went out to a software conference, and presented to a particular software that we were in business. I don't even think we'd incorporated yet. When we left, we were a reseller of their software, which is how we got started, which was fun.
We'll get the sale first. That's good.
But a lot of tenacity and guts, I guess, will get you.
No, that's what it takes. And that's, I can relate to that, Joni, definitely.
Maybe a little BS, I guess, along
the
way.
All right.
That's all right.
Yeah. And I remember as we opened up the doors, like, we had confidence, but we were willing to pretty much, like, follow any lead we could get. I remember even thinking, sitting in an office one day, and the water cooler guy was coming, and it was like, cool, we have a meeting today, because otherwise you're still working for customers and looking to what you do. So I feel like as we got going, we started getting more and more traction under our belt, because there was a gap in the marketplace, and that was connecting the ERP installations with the actual functions of the business. And there wasn't a lot of that going on at that time. We were a little bit more focused on end user acceptance than we were about installing software. And so that's why it was kind of fun to see the different backgrounds, the different understanding of business again play out and kind of start to connect. So we started growing faster. I would say my partner was so good at sales and getting out there, and I was probably more of the internal, more focused on the business of structure and infrastructure piece of it. But over time, I guess we grew to about 100 people, maybe 110 people. And really what started to happen is I think my partner and I were not on the same page as far as like where we saw the business going long term and what we valued. And he had already run another business and sold that successfully. And so he had one way to run a business, I had another. And started using Aileron, which was, again, out of the IMS company when I first used them, and started to realize that I was probably really intrigued more by culture and strategy than what my partner's focus was. So over time, we had a board of advisors and, you know, pretty much started to decide that that was not, I don't think it was a long-term solution. It was a long-term fit for either one of us. So we ended up selling it after 5 years. And then that's kind of when the door opened to work with Clay on Aileron.
Okay. So it's interesting. So it seemed like you and your partner kind of got into those different roles, but you almost kind of, I don't want to say fell into it, but as you just kind of seemed natural to kind of go into those different roles without necessarily talking about it. And you're busy running and growing and making things happen. And then you almost kind of woke up one day kind of saying, wait a minute. How'd you get over there and I'm over here, right? And almost like you couldn't bridge those gaps. Like you had some pretty deep differences. You know, you mentioned in terms of just the overall where you saw it going, but also just some different values and how you kind of approach stuff. So those are often hard to kind of see. And I guess when you do become a partner in a business too, you start to get to know each other in ways maybe you didn't know each other before. And so that's, you know, those things kind of combined, but I mean, in spite of that, you had some pretty good success. I mean, to grow from zero people to 100-plus people in 5 years and be able to sell the business, I mean, that's quite rare
at that size. And, yeah, you're to be commended for something like that. That's no easy task.
Thanks. When you talk about the roles, what's interesting, and this is why I feel like I really enjoy working with small businesses today, is even though I had maybe 10 years, 12 years of business experience, when I got the title of president, and at the beginning it was president of zero people, right? So it wasn't like a really big job.
Titles are everything, right?
But it was like, I had no idea what I was doing whatsoever. And I was used to being a doer, and I was in big company structures, so I understood, you know, kind of how to do my thing. But all of a sudden, when you're in a business and you're starting it and you have to structure things while you're also doing, and you're also supposed to be working through other people as you grow, it was a really tough school of knocks. There was a lot of school of hard knocks in that situation. You feel lonely, like we've all talked about in our previous conversations, some of the emotions that you go through in owning a business, and it's a lot of fear, there's loneliness, there's lack of confidence, you know, there's certainly opportunity and excitement and all that too, but it's quite a roller coaster.
Well, you summarize that very well, Joni. I think that's something that Jack and I will talk to people a lot about, and we have quite a few clients who have either no college or limited college, or even if they do have some college, it's often not even business related, and they often apologize, like they feel like they're second class citizens for not having that background. And Jack and I often talk about, so look, you know, you can go get a business degree or go get an MBA at a school. Chances are it's not going to help you too much when it comes to running a small business, because most of that stuff's geared towards bigger companies and teaching you different skills or ways to work within different divisions of bigger companies, as opposed to here's how you kind of jump in and run your own thing. And so, yeah, you did it after, you know, a number of years of experience of working at different size companies, being exposed to a lot of different pieces of it. And even after all that, you're saying, hey, I still didn't feel like I was necessarily prepared or had everything I needed to kind of get things started and going.
There's a big difference between the worries of a job with a big company and the worries of somebody who is president of a small company. You know, the worries are certainly more personal and meaningful, in the sense that there's a little bit of a possible disaster at the end of that decision if it isn't good, and that's what you tend to worry about. Where a job, the worries are not nearly as devastating, and that's a big difference, and that's a big deal too.
It really is. Yeah, and I agree with you. I think the worries are different, and the trajectory of personal growth is a lot faster, because you're having to learn so many different aspects of running a business, whether it be how to finance, how to get customers. So the development areas are so different and so much faster than when you go into a big company into a more specialized role. Here you have to be a generalist doing a lot of different things.
No, you're right. You're right. That's a huge difference, quite frankly, and you don't realize the education you're getting at the time, because the worries come in such big clumps. You know, you're becoming very good, and I'm sure you see that with the next opportunity you move on to, or the next assessment or analysis of a business. You can't realize, you even take it for granted, how smart you become.
Well, you touched on a word that we hear a lot, and I know it's out there, but I just want to reinforce that. You mentioned the word lonely. So here you are, a partner in a business. You know, at that point, you probably had several employees, you had people around you, right? So people are thinking, how in the world could you be lonely, right? And I think it's often one of those things that's probably misunderstood. I'm guessing that may have been one of the things that led you to seek out the IIMS classes that you're talking about, in terms of trying to find some other folks out there, because maybe there were some things you couldn't talk to your partner about, or maybe he wasn't around, or again, wasn't interested in some of the things that you were thinking about. But is that part of what kind of led you to look outside, between the IIMS company stuff? And you also mentioned you guys had a board of advisors kind of set up. So is that what kind of led to that?
Absolutely. It's really funny, because as you bring that up, you kind of go through like different phases. So I think to be a business owner, an entrepreneur, someone who maybe quits a full-time job to go try something, you've got a lot of independence in you that says, I can do this on my own, or we can make this work, we've got this. But with that independence comes that you are kind of rowing the boat in a different direction than everybody else. You're not part of a big team. And then there's, to your point, maybe like what you can share and not share. So as you're growing, it's not good to walk around and tell your employees you're scared to death whether you're going to make payroll next week or not.
You wouldn't advise that for people. Huh? That's going to
send the right a confidence builder, right?
Right.
Maybe you should be sharing it, but it's not something you feel like you should. And then you probably don't want to turn around and go home and tell your husband, gosh, I think we might lose our house next because that contract came in.
You're spreading fairy dust everywhere, right? Telling employees you aren't going to get paid, telling your husband you're going to lose the house. This is great. This is the best thing we ever did, huh? This is fantastic, right?
So you end up carrying all that responsibility around in your head and not sharing it with others, you know, because you want to protect them or you don't want to, you're not vulnerable enough to share it or it's probably not in your best interest to share it. So you end up, that becomes like a very lonely place to be. You've got a lot of worries and you don't have a place to process those. A board is a wonderful place if you've got a board that is more in it for you than like trying to make sure you're performing. I guess it depends on your relationship with your board. So then what you find is I ended up going to a program at Aileron called the Course for Presidents. And you get in a room with 20 to 25 other business owners, and you all think you're so different. So I'm sitting next to a guy running a landscaping company and another person who's a manufacturer, and you're thinking, oh, yeah, our businesses are all different. And then you start to hear people talk, and you go, wow, although our businesses are the different industries or different, 80% of what we're going through is the same. And you find out that a lot of other people don't walk around telling their employees that they're not going to make payroll next week.
That's right.
That's amazing, the commonality that exists.
All right. We have to hit our bottom of the hour break here real quick. And when we come back, this is a perfect segue now to talk a little more about what Aileron does. And I want to come back and learn more about that, Joni. So hold on just a minute. We'll be back shortly, folks. So stay tuned. We got some more Dirty Secrets of Small Business coming your way. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
And I'm Jack Mancini.
And stick around. More coming your way here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back to Dirty Secret Small Business. I'm Adam Thunholt.
I'm Jack Mancini, and it's great to be here tonight.
It is. We've got on the line. Out at the company that she was with, and she just attended her first class. It was called the President's class. There's 25 other owners in there, and it sounded like you had some epiphanies as you were kind of getting into that, Joni, in terms of, hey, I'm not the only one, even though we're in very different companies, in terms of the challenges and struggles and opportunities that were kind of going on. So it sounded like that was a big eye-opener for you to kind of go into that class for the first time.
It absolutely was. Yeah, I think I had ahas like every, 10 minutes. and it was really interesting to hear other people's perspectives. Not only could we relate to each other as far as the emotions or the fears or the struggles that we were all going through were very common. And then it was just interesting to hear like how different people, what they had tried or different thought changes on how to manage through some of those different pieces. And that's kind of why the Course for Presidents was invented in the first place. When Clay first had a chance to buy into the Iams company from Paul Iams, he was out to dinner with his wife to celebrate, and she said, "You don't really seem that excited." What's wrong? And he said, "I'm really nervous." And she goes, "Why are you nervous? You've been at Iams, 5 or 6 years now." And he said, "Because now I'm the president and I don't know how to do that. I don't know what to do." He said, "Well, then go find out. Like, go start figuring it out." And so that's kind of why the Course for President exists, is it's to start to talk about what is the framework and the job description of a president of a small business. And how do you start to put in the longer, sustainable processes that allow people to grow and manage culture and for you to drive it strategically and so forth?
Yeah, it's funny. We were having lunch actually earlier today with a client and his bankers, which is very unusual because we don't have too many clients of ours who rave about their bankers. In fact, Joni, it's rare that they even know who their banker's name is. But in this case, they've been raving about the banker. And It was funny hearing our client talk, because it's, you know, he's been a client about 3 years now, and it's always fun to see our clients present themselves, and you know, it's, that gives Jack and I kind of those goosebump and high five moments, just kind of seeing our product at work there, so to speak. And he was talking about that in terms of just, you know, frustrations he has with some of his customers who are also business owners, and he's trying to, you know, help them see the light a little bit, you know, where they're trying to negotiate for something for, you know, being $2 less. He's saying, oh, no, that's not the answer. Mine's $2 more, and then here's a way I can help you sell it for $4 more and make more money out of it. So try to get them out of those things, right, or try to get them away from doing the work of the business to kind of stepping away from it. He said, I keep trying, and he said, unfortunately, most of them are not, you know, receptive to it, and it's frustrating. But the ones that are, he said, you know, he has a lot of fun doing that too, to kind of help them out, just to be able to say, here's a different way of thinking about it.
Oh, it's very fulfilling. Yeah, you know, we get great satisfaction out of seeing our customers get better, and it comes back when they're presenting. It's you know, all part of this job. That's why we've been together so long, Adam.
That's right. So how many years into owning your own thing did you go to this course for presidents?
About 3 years in.
3 years in. Okay, and so at that point there were starting to be some doubts or some questions or some shakiness, and so. And this was an ongoing course, or is it just a short-term course for you?
It was a two-day program, but then you got set like 6 business advisor sessions where you could meet with a business advisor one-on-one and kind of talk through like your specific struggles and maybe what approaches you might want to try or use. And they really spend a lot of time. They're not consultants, but they spend more time asking you good questions, which is I imagine exactly what both of you do, and it helps people think through the answers clearer. I think when you're in your own head, they always say your brains are bad neighborhoods when you're there all alone.
You should have warning signs for that, right? Or the alarms going off, right? Yeah, you're in your own head. That's good. I like that.
Yeah, it gets really dark and dreary and you know, fearful and whatever, and all of a sudden you come across a really good advisor, like imagine what you guys do with your clients and what we try to do, and they ask you a good question like, so what do you want to do? What do you want this business to look like a year from now that's different than it is today? You know, what could you do to make there? What's keeping you from making that change? All of a sudden you start getting these questions, and so they started asking good questions. And all of a sudden you start to go, what rules in my head are keeping me from doing that or finding out or anything? And it just felt very empowering. It was a very empowering process.
Okay, that's a very, very positive experience for it. So you went through that, had the couple-day session, had the 6 sessions with your advisors, and then you're still running your business at this point. But at some point, like you said, you guys decided to sell.
Yep.
And where did the seed get planted for all of a sudden for you to now, you know, once you sold and now go to Aileron? How'd that happen?
Well, I wish I could say it was a planned event again, but it wasn't. I started doing independent consulting, and I thought, gosh, I really loved owning a business, and I will do that again, just maybe on my own or with my husband or whatever, and I'll never work for anybody else. And then I always joked, unless Clay Mattil calls. And it really wasn't like Clay and I had a strong relationship where we saw each other all the time. But guess what? They ended up calling and saying that they were going to take the classes from the IMS company because it was getting sold to Procter & Gamble, and they now wanted to create a nonprofit that supported small businesses across the country. And they wanted to help scale this network as far as business owners being able to talk to each other and to be able to get exposed to some of the principles you don't really learn except for through the hard school of knocks. And so anyway, and asked if I might be available, and if we started interviewing and talking through it, and then I've been there now 16 years.
Oh boy. Okay.
So you're one of the first people that they brought on board once they pulled out of IMS.
Yep, I was the first full-time employee.
Well, there you go. That's a job you're used to, right? Being president of, you know, of yourself.
Of nobody.
All right. So you're eminently qualified for it.
Yeah, you can't blame too much on somebody else, right?
Yeah, right.
So yeah, I'm actually pretty qualified at that one now.
That's good. Well, and yeah, okay. So you joined up there, and talk a little about, too, you mentioned a key word there, Joni, nonprofit. So, you know, your business career to that point had been all for-profit stuff. You know, what kind of went through your mind when you heard the idea of a nonprofit? Did you get scared? Did you maybe think of running the other direction? I don't know what exposure you had to nonprofits before then.
So I really hadn't, as far as actually working in one. And yes, I'd like to say that my first attitude towards working in a nonprofit was positive. I felt like there was a world of difference between the way for-profit work and nonprofit work. And I'm not sure that's a fair assumption anymore. And what I really appreciate is that at the end of the day, they're both organizations that are trying to do some kind of good work. The profits in a for-profit business is probably an indicator that you're doing something right and well. And in a nonprofit, you probably count more on impact than you count on profits for that feedback. But besides that, I don't think we skipped a beat, and I don't think we ever looked back besides doing .org on our website that we were any different than a for-profit business. You know, we do, just like for-profit business, we do customer segmentation, and we do value props, and we do strategy, and we develop people, and we manage a culture. And I think we tried to make sure that we didn't become so mission-focused in the way that it didn't allow us to be sustainable. Like, how do we create a business model that allows this good work to keep going rather than drain us out of business? But it's still wonderful to work in an environment where we don't have an agenda. Like, we really don't have to worry about selling to people. It's really, if this is helpful and valuable to you, use it. And if it's not, no problem.
Well, if it's a good people, Joni, will make an organization better. The nonprofit title basically, you know, has an impression in the outside world of how we like to call it poor pockets, and somehow they can't hire good people because they can't afford it, and they start making mistakes on the organization, which leads to issues. But that's true for every company. You know, if you come in there with the right attitude, the focus on running a good organization, putting in good processes, good procedures, good financial accounting, because you have to raise money in one way or another. You need money to run the organization. You're going to be just as good as the best of for-profits. But it usually doesn't work out that way. Only because they come in, they being the top management, come in with an attitude of affordability. And that exists in all organizations.
But, and that's where we've been really blessed, because we are very well funded with Clay, from Clay Mary, and Mary, his wife, and the Mattil family. And they have believed in this premise that if we can help small businesses thrive and increase the leadership competency across the country, then we're actually raising the tide for all boats, you know, from the standpoint of raising the quality of life.
Right.
Because the stronger small businesses become, and we keep that entrepreneurial foundation across our country, I think if there's something like 85% or 90% of all jobs in our country are based on small business. I mean, it's a wild number.
That's right.
And so you want to keep that entrepreneurial base strong, just like you want to have strong government and strong corporate things. But so many people are employed by the small business, and their benefits are dependent upon it, and families are dependent upon it, and innovation comes from there, and so forth. I could go on and on about all the good that can happen if we have a strong entrepreneurial base of companies across this country.
Well, I think one of the things you didn't say there, I know you're relatively humble, so I'll say it for you. You know, the fact that you went in, and again, you being the first one in, you didn't allow that in, and you had the mindset, and what I often been frustrated with nonprofits is it seems like a lot of folks, when they come into the nonprofit world, and it could be anything from, you know, a local service organization or a parents group to other nonprofits, they seem to lobotomize themselves before they go in there. and they, mm-hmm. they forget all the things that have made them successful outside of the nonprofit world, and don't see how they apply to the to that world. I've never quite understood that. So it's very confusing to me. So, and I have a story I want to share, but we're up against our next break here. I want to share a real quick story when we get back in terms of some experience with nonprofits that Jack and I had where he got very, very frustrated. And I'll give some insight into why that happened. And then we'll talk more about Aileron and kind of stuff you guys are doing as part of Aileron here in our final segment. So stay tuned for that. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
I'm Jack Mancini, and Adam's getting ready to pick on me again, I can tell.
That's right. You better stay tuned. We got more Dirty Secrets of Small Business, which includes me picking on Jack here on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTradio.com. All right. Welcome back. We're here for our final segment of Dirty Secrets of Small Business. I'm Adam Sonhalter.
I'm Jack Mancini, and these segments fly by, don't they, Adam?
Yes, they do. We got Joni Fetters of Aileron here on the line, and as we're going to break, I said I wanted to share a story. See, part of the fun of our show here, Joni, I got a chance to pick on Jack, and then when we have guests on, I can't pick on Jack as much, right? So I got to find my opportunities for it. He always knows where they're coming, but we're talking about the whole nonprofit world. And when Jack and I first started working together with MVP, he was already involved in a nonprofit that he actually founded to help teach patients how to deal with their doctors. And from a behavior personality standpoint, Jack's known as a D. I think you're familiar with DISC. He's a pretty strong D. And that's a pretty direct, driving, demanding type person. And as he's gotten older and more wise in his career, he's learned where he can turn that on and turn that off. But I remember this meeting where we were in with a nonprofit, because he got me involved with it a bit as well. And we had a few folks around staff that were folks who were involved in creating curriculum and doing different kind of things. But they had been involved in the nonprofit world, these folks, okay? And this was really Jack's big first-time foray into it. And I remember having a couple of meetings that kind of went on. And they weren't necessarily going real well. You know, it was like, you know, he'd say black, they'd say white kind of thing. It just, there was a lot of friction, right? So he came to me, he's like, what's going on here? I feel like I can't communicate with these folks, right? We started to realize, to understand that it's so key, the kind of people that you bring in, that if they didn't, you know, these folks didn't have that for-profit experience, that business experience, to them, it was almost an evil thing that they had the business background. And Jack scratches, I go, wait a minute, okay, yeah, we are a nonprofit, folks. We have to get funding, and we have to be sustainable. We have to do these things, and it's, you know, you call it what you want, but it's just like a for profit, right?
That's right, exactly.
I remember he almost had veins bulging in his head. He's like, I can't figure this thing out. And it was just like, yeah, it's a whole different world. So it's great to hear that you were able to avoid that in terms of the folks you were kind of bringing in, having that mindset between Clay and his family, but also you kind of coming in there to be able to kind of have that as a launching pad. So I want to give you a little time too to talk about this. You know, what kind of stuff does Aileron provide? I mean, why don't you give us a little background on that right now, Joni? That'd be great.
Absolutely. And I love your thoughts on the nonprofit piece, too, because I think it is, like, interesting. A lot of nonprofits do feel guilty for looking at what the organization needs because their mission is about kids or dogs or whatever it is. But you need, in order to make it win-win and long-term, you have to think about the organization surviving, too, and putting that in there. And I think that's the balance, to your point, that you can sometimes bring when you've got maybe for-profit experience or nonprofit people who can understand that. We're getting a lot more nonprofits these days who are really smart as far as understanding that we are about a mission, but we need to do it in a way that's sustainable for the organization, or we won't be able to help people in 5 years. So it's kind of refreshing to see some of that, you know, working with us. So what do we do? At the end of the day, the way I describe Aileron is it's a community of people who are passionate about small businesses and practicing and involving what we would call professional management that creates a thriving, sustainable business. And you can use the community to process with each other. You can do it to learn from each other. So we do have programs and workshops where everybody gets together. We've expanded it to the organizations, so privately held organizations. So you'll see quite often on Aileron's campus or virtually, we'll work with an entire team, a leadership team or the business owner and many people, or arm the business owner with ways to take these concepts back into his organization, because we quickly realized that if you work with the business owner, there's a great need there. But then if they want to go back and install people development processes or managing their culture or business model decisions or whatever, they need other people around them. They don't want to be lonely and trying to push a snowball up the hill. So we actually do a lot of work with the entire team, figuring out, you know, what's sitting in the way of them changing or getting to the next strategic level or whatever it is. So anywhere between programs, courses around pretty much what we call our DOC model, which is how is a business owner setting direction, aligning the operations, and establishing controls to know we're going in the right direction. And we work with people in the areas that I've already mentioned, culture, people development, and those on systems.
Okay, so you have kind of stock programs, but you also do custom stuff too, right? You'll go and design programs or make sure it's fitting for whatever their particular needs are going to be.
Absolutely.
And you do, yeah. If I remember, you do both stuff. You mentioned the campus, and then you guys will also go on site as well, and then you have the virtual piece of it. So you've got kind of whatever somebody needs, whether they want to come visit you, whether they want you to come to them, or whether you want to do it in the virtual world. You guys seem to have solutions for all those things.
Yep, we sure do. And it's fun because we're really, our starting point is what do they want to achieve in the business and with each other. And it may be that I want to bring my son into the business, or it might be that we want the family to get along, or it might be that we want to sell in 3 years, or we want to improve our culture. You know, we hear that. We don't like where we work, even though I created it. I don't like where we work.
Yeah, whose fault is that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you know.
How are we going to correct it? That's a big thing.
They're going to take you out of the way, right?
So we start with that in mind. I mean, that's really where we want to start with people, is like understanding what they're trying to achieve, and then how do they leverage these concepts of professional management to help them get there, and what does that look like, and what's going to get in their way, what people need to be involved to help make that change. So it's just fun. You know, you're working, as you guys know, the people in privately held businesses are so energetic. They've got lots of ideas. They've got fears and frustrations too, but they got a lot of tenacity and determination and grit, and it's just a really fun group of people to work with.
Now, how do most people find out about Aileron?
I would say mostly it's word of mouth. We're working with people like yourselves who are also interested in the same thing. Like you've said several times, like you love watching your clients succeed. And so I think where we get uncovered is when we work with other people who that's really their main joy in their business, is helping people succeed and giving, honestly, the respect to what they're doing. And so it's probably word of mouth. Okay. We've been in Forbes, and we're a contributor, entrepreneur.com, and we've had some beautiful media coverage, but I would say the majority is, we've got one business owner right now. He's brought like 8 people through in the last 3 weeks.
Oh,
he's like,
boy.
You got to go to Aileron.
Golden. Must have done real well for him.
Yep.
You got to find more of him. That's one of those, again, this is the dirty secrets of small business, folks. And that's one of those dirty secrets we've talked about a number of times. When it comes to small business, I don't care what kind of business you're in, the whole word of mouth and referrals, the whole idea of know, like, and trust, and people who know, like, and trust you're going to do it, especially if you're dealing in the small business market, because the small business folks have been targeted, if I can use that word, Jack, have been targeted a lot in terms of everything from insurance companies and banks and marketing companies, you name it. You know, everybody's kind of are aiming at these folks, and very few deliver value. So what happens is, I think what you're seeing, you're giving just one example here recently, Joni, of this one individual. When they do see it, they recognize it right away and say, hey, I got to tell everybody about this too. They need to know. These folks are here. There is some help that's out there. You mentioned the word lonely again a few minutes ago. Yeah, there's help out here, folks. You know, go out and look for it and find it, and these folks can be able to help you, which is what I think most folks are looking for. They're looking for that help, and so if you can provide it, that's a fantastic thing. So
yeah.
we only have a couple minutes left here. You know, what's the future hold? So you're 16, 17 years into this. You know, what's the next 16, 17 years look like? You mentioned you guys think about strategy, but what's Aileron looking like, and what's the future for Joni Fetters look like?
I don't know, because I don't know if I've ever planned it out more than tomorrow. But I can tell you from the standpoint of Aileron, we sat today in a 3-hour session where we're continuing to understand how we shift our business and what strategies we think will reach more people and help more business owners and their teams. And so I'm excited about, I think in the next 3 to 5 years, the opportunity we really have is around scaling. That is that we have been kind of a little secret, even in Dayton. People say, I didn't even know you existed. You mean you're on 114 acres and Clay's invested over $150 million into this, all this support?
That's pretty easy to miss, right?
Yeah,
right.
Jeez, okay. So I feel like I think that's the hope, which is why it's so fun. This, the title of your podcast is, and your show is, I think that's probably our opportunity, is not to be such a secret anymore, and to get out there so more people can use it.
Okay. Well, that's
a good evolution. That's really where you should be at your point. And, you know, to get that name out, that's a whole different mindset to do that marketing. But where you guys are at, absolutely. You got a good product. You got a good organization. So that word has to get out.
And one of the words you mentioned when you were describing Aileron, which really jumped out to me, was the word community. I think that's a very, very good word. I think, you know, when you talk about the small business community, and it's one of those things when, you know, Jack and I get in a room full of entrepreneurs, and I know you can relate to this, Joni, it just feels like home, okay? It feels like that community. Whereas we get in a room with some suits and ties, and, you know, I start to get hives, you know, and just, you know, it start to break out. And it's not a conscious thing. It's just it's a physical reaction thing of just, it doesn't feel right. And there's a certain, yeah. So that word community, I think, is a very, very true word. And I think when other entrepreneurs meet each other, there's that kinship that we all have, and it's a fantastic thing. You can't fake it. And people, you know, will see if it's authentic or not. And I think, you know, one of the reasons you guys have had such great success here is because of, I think, you know, not only your authenticity, but all the folks you kind of brought in. And I wanted to highlight this before we get to the end, because you mentioned this off the air to us, how, you know, one of the come back to that for-profit mindset, is you're very conscious of trying to get to where you guys are going to be sustainable and not have to rely upon outside funding if you don't need to. And that's a great way to kind of think about it and have that plan down to try to get that to be a reality. So that's a wonderful way to be able to approach stuff, in a way that you guys are living what you're talking about too, which is fantastic to see. So, well, as we often say, this is often the fastest hour in radio and podcast. And Joni, we appreciate having you with us here tonight to share some of your background and story. I know our listeners are going to love hearing about it, and the ones who have heard it tonight have absolutely loved it as well. You tell it well. You've got some great perspective on things, and we really appreciate you being part of our show tonight, Joni.
Definitely, Joni.
All right.
Well, thanks for having me and all the conversations we've had. It's really been enjoyable.
Well, I'm sure we will be staying in touch for sure here, Joni. We really appreciate it. And for our listeners, we appreciate you being part of the show here this week as well on Dirty Secrets of Small Business. And we invite you to tune in every Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. If you have any questions or want to get hold of us in between, you can email us at radio@maximumvp.com or give us a call, 877-849-0670. If you miss any of tonight's show or any of our previous shows, you can go over to DirtySecretsOfSmallBusiness.com and you get all the shows there. You can subscribe with things like iTunes, and if you do leave a review, it'd be fantastic. Hey, learn more Dirty Secrets of Small Business next Wednesday, 7 p.m. Eastern. And thanks for listening on Integrity Radio, WINT 1330 AM, 101.5 FM, and online, WINTRadio.com.